vale. The holiday season is upon us once again. It just crept right up so seamlessly. And it reminds us to be kind, hopefully, and generous. In great contrast to what's going on in the public sphere. So we have to hold the entire breadth of energies carefully at this season. And of course, in our practice, kindness and generosity are our primary vows year-round. They are our primary vows, generosity and kindness. And at this time of year, they are really the most potent gifts that we can offer in this season. And I heard a few days ago the retail season is not very robust this year. Sounds like a lot of people aren't shopping the way they usually are, which I would love to interpret as a decision collectively to turn from the material way of approaching the festival and really bringing forward the more internal, heartfelt aspect of what we can offer each other at this time of the year. But also, I think a lot of people don't have much money, contrary to the economic reports. So there's a lot we're meeting right now. Generosity. Dana in our tradition is generosity. And it's the vehicle, actually, of all of life. It's one of the three wheels. One of the three wheels. Giving, receiving, and gift. Dana. And this wheel is constantly turning. It naturally turns. Generosity is a natural practice. And through it, through this practice, through taking it up very intentionally, we can investigate every aspect of our life. In what ways do we offer and in what ways do we withhold? In what ways do we offer and what ways do we receive? What are we offering? What are we receiving? So when we're mindful of this practice, we notice the continual flow of goods and services that come our way, materially, situationally, interpersonally. I was walking over here and noticing there was a man standing at the edge of the field with his camera equipment. And he was just standing there doing, it looked like standing meditation. He was just standing there. So I asked him, you know, good evening, and what are you doing? And he said he was waiting for the great horned owl that usually perches right at this time of day in that tree. And he pointed to the place where. And we could hear the great horned owl. But it was further in the woods, not at its edge perch yet. So actually, the perch where it is, just as it's turning completely dark, is right at the edge of a field where it probably finds some good things to eat, I would think, right? But I was just reminded of giver, receiver, and gift, not only in the life of the owl by the field, but in my own life. It just deeply warmed my heart to have a moment like that. So everything, the natural world is a gifting economy, freely flowing. It's not like the money economy, where you pay your money and you get your product. You know, okay, here's my dollar, let me have that candy bar. here's $49, I think now you would say, here's $49, let me have that pair of flip-flops over there. It used to be, here's $6 for that pair of flip-flops. Times have changed a lot. In the natural flow of giver, receiver, and gift, the relationship between, so as opposed to the money kind of exchange, the relationship between what we give and what we get can be vastly more subtle and surprising and just about always perfect in some mysterious or obvious way. So much so that we can't always discern the giver and from the gift. Who's the giver and who's the receiver? In this world of picking and choosing, we have good and bad, success and failure. But in the world of Dharma, of the one Dharma, where we are all in this together as an interdependent functional system, everything offered can be received as a gift. If we are a person of practice, if we have the right orientation of mind and heart, and we can use everything that comes our way, our awakened way, as a benefit, to benefit in some way. So very often the thing that looks at first like a terrible thing may have, if approached with the mind of practice, can turn to benefit in some way. And sometimes very obviously, and sometimes way less obvious. Because there are some pretty rough things that happen in life, and it can be very hard to see what benefit can be had from it. But really, this gets at the crux of our situation now in the current state of the world, is what benefit can we derive from the difficulties we're all embroiled in? I think as people of practice, that is the response. It's like, okay, what can be learned? How can we be guided by these events, these personalities, these displays that are going on? So I thought of something that happened a number of years ago. I had a friend who had just a beautiful garden. And the people bought the property adjacent. They had just bought the property, and they built a concrete wall right by her garden. And she was just beside herself. She was so upset about it. And she just wasn't sure what she would do about it. And actually, after a while, she lived there. She calmed down a little bit, and she decided that actually this is a spur to her to move to her building phase. And she had always not known what she was going to do to support herself in her retirement. And so the moment came where there was nothing she could do but build this this tiny house in her back garden that she can now rent out. And nothing else would have spurred her except the despair she felt when somebody else had blocked her garden path. It's really a strange situation, but well handled. So there's a deep truth to trouble, because it is real, it happens. So there's some kind of true to circumstances that it is. And we have a symbol for that in Buddhism, and actually it's kind of a perennial symbol in a lot of traditions, which is the Enso. The Enso is the symbol that we use for the awakened mind. The Enso is a sacred symbol. It means a circle, or sometimes a circle of togetherness, or a circle of community. The beauty of imperfection is one of the things. The art of letting go of expectations. One calligrapher put it very nicely. She said, "The Enso is drawn using only one brush stroke, So everybody know what that is? It's that big swirl that's open. As a meditative practice in letting go of the mind and allowing the body to create, which is what our practice is about, the singular brushstroke allows for no modifications. I thought that was a great phrase. The singular brushstroke allows for no modifications. Once it's down, it's there. That's it. If it's round, if it's closed, if it's open, if it's, you know, kind of not round, not square, not to some discernible, beautiful pattern, but there it is. One swipe, bringing wholeness forth, wholeness in whatever form it takes. And that is a beautiful description of our life. You know, moment by moment, it comes forward as it is, and it's open. And the heart of it is empty. Empty in that it is transforming all the time. And there's it also expresses simultaneity, which is a beautiful practice that's developed a lot in Dzogchen, and the Tibetan practice of Dzogchen is simultaneity. Everything comes forward complete moment by moment. In that way, there's an aspect that is not about cause and effect. It's about simultaneous, instantaneous emergence. So, when it's done, what do we have to work with? What do we have to work with each situation that comes up? Which is true all the time. We do something. We do something well. We do something poorly. Or half-heartedly, carelessly. And then that's what stands, and that's what we have to work with. This is our ordinary life, our usual condition. This is our situation now. No matter what we have to say or how we dislike all these things that are going on, it's what we have to work with. And if we bring our heart and mind of practice to whatever we have to work with, that's how we bring practice to our moment. You know, people are saying, how do I practice with the moment? Well, you practice with the moment the way you've always practiced with the moment. The tendency can be to say, well, I just feel so despairing. I feel so grief-stricken. That sounds pretty sane to me. And yet, that's not the entirety of the situation. There is no predicting. Especially if we continue to take our wholehearted intention to heal the world. Whether or not that's possible, that's a whole different thing, but we can offer, we can do our best, we can bring our life energies forward with dignity and intention and love. So when we practice in this way, with a mind and heart of wholeness, we continually receive the gifts and the guidance from every circumstance we meet. We can recognize this over and over in every situation in our lives. The gift of the guidance, the gift of the man standing there and pointing out the great horned owl. I have to admit, when I left my house, I was really depressed. I had a very depressed afternoon. And there was something about that that was exactly, it felt like such a gift from the natural world, facilitated by another sane human being who was standing still and quiet and waiting for the great horned owl. That's rather what we do when we do zazen, huh? Mm-hmm. We're not waiting. We're in touch with that owl, that wise owl. And we can recognize this comes up over and over in small and in not dramatic, in very ordinary and also rather dramatic ways. So, this affects realizing this and practicing in this way affects in many ways how we use this one brief individual life that we have. We all have such a small life, smack in the middle of a vast wilderness of life. in the wild depths of human nature and of all of nature. So we can ask, what is being offered through me, through my life? What can I contribute that nobody but me can contribute? What is it that this life that I have lived conditioned in me that can really be of value, that can be offered? And we don't have to know, we just have to be ourselves, our true self. So on an individual level, we must use our personal gifts and talents, or they become a source of difficulties. I've seen this over and over again, and maybe you have too. We have to use our gifts, and we have to recognize our limits, both together, because it refines our offering. Recognizing our limits sometimes frees us to really use our gift, since we are no longer expending a lot of energy trying to improve ourselves based on some idea of who we should be, how we should be. I think we all suffer with this in ways. So an example of this would be if you're detail-oriented, an example of finding the context, the right context for who you are so that you can be most potent with your life. And that takes time. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of apprenticeships to figure out the right context. And to hone it, to direct. So if you're detail-oriented, and you don't have a life situation that uses that orientation, the very detail orientation can become a nitpicking, endlessly anxious, checking and rechecking annoyance to you and everybody around you, sticking your nose in things, saying, no, that way, this way. But if you're an administrator, an accountant, a farmer, a medical researcher, a detective, a designer of circuitry, your detail orientation, freely engaged and offered, is your wonderful gift to the world. You can really appreciate this detail orientation. And is your expression of Donna generous, naturally flowing through you on behalf of the greater need? So what is it in you that is the natural, the gifts? Donna, generosity is a lens for investigating everything. How do I render this a gift? How do I receive this as a gift? Not just giving of material things, which most of us have too much of anyway, but more importantly, how we use our resources, internal and external, our inner resources and our outer, how we use our thinking and our actions to help in the world of suffering and need. This is a both-and situation. The world is both endlessly gifted and endlessly in need. Turmoil, distress, always, always unfolding. Samsara and nirvana occur together. The world of greed and desire and aversion, and the world of generosity and kindness. So we can consider, when I offer each moment as Donna, I am instantly transformed into the wealthiest and happiest human being possible. We can all check that out. In practicing generosity, the happiness is naturally upwelling. So, this brings us then that's the generosity. Then the kindness, a few words about kindness. We did, on Thursday, we did the loving kindness metta service, which we do at the full moon every month. And I think all the time about loving kindness in relation to the current political situation and how to relate to current events that are sweeping us all along with kindness. So first of all, I hear a lot of people say, I just can't stand it anymore, I'm turning off the news. That's kindness. There is time to turn it off so that you can relax and open your heart and be in touch with loving kindness and ease. So we want to think about what are our possibilities here. What are the opportunities for practice that we all have? Because the rewards of giving depend strongly on the climate in which the giving occurs. We don't have absolute principles that apply in every situation. That's Noam Chomsky. We don't have absolute principles that apply in every situation. And in the world of samsara, that's true. In the world of nirvana, we do have some absolute principles, which we call precepts. But how we apply those takes wisdom. What the way that we wield these tools. And we can foster a climate that will make the most of what we offer. And that's part of what we do at the Zen Center. We are fostering a climate for those who are directly practicing here, but also any of the communities that we all go out and live our lives among is fostering the climate. Any wise letter to our representatives in government, or any time we get in touch with a corporation about their product that is carelessly adding to the current situation. I mean, there are so many ways to foster a climate of intelligence and true response to need. The Buddha had three things to look at here. First of all, in generating giving and giving loving kindness, we want to look at our motives for giving. Is it to get something in particular? Is it to get somebody's regard? Is it to get a thing or a paycheck or whatever? We cultivate, especially, and this is the Buddha's words, we cultivate contentment with little. And Thich Nhat Hanh really emphasizes that these days, is the true practice that we all practice is cultivating contentment, which doesn't mean going along with everything. That can be misunderstood, but it means having the capacity to feel contentment, to appreciate what is enough. And that it doesn't take much to be enough. And we also, the third one that the Buddha points out is we give where it is best used. This is part of not being careless or wasteful, is to give where it is best used. And that means that we have to educate ourselves about our situation and the conditions that are involved. We all really need to be educating ourselves about ecological issues, about human rights issues. The state of life in Washington, D.C. and the halls of power and money are specifically conditioned to holding on to and increasing control and money. That's the conditions there. That's what it's all about. The state of our life, who are living according to the way, Buddha way, is conditioned by concern for connection, love, and well-being, aware of the deeply interdependent conditions that create these. I'm not saying that nobody in government is concerned about the well-being, but we certainly aren't hearing a lot about that these days. So we are aware of our primary values and we practice metta, loving kindness, actively. It is not just a thought. It is how we conduct our daily round. Fostering kindness to ourselves, working with all the things that give us misery, our own inner judgmental voices and slave driver voices, and all the ways that we give ourselves a hard time. And then we foster a climate of kindness and generosity and intelligence. So the Buddha, staying with this theme of metta for a minute, said, "Monks, when universal love leading to liberation of mind is ardently practiced, developed, unrelentingly resorted to, used as one's vehicle, made the foundation of one's life, fully established, well consolidated, and perfected, then these 11 blessings may be expected." What 11? So then he tells us what we can get if we're loving and kind. So here's what we can get. We can sleep happily. Wake happily. One does not suffer bad dreams. One is dear to human beings. One is dear to non-human beings. The gods protect one. No fire or poison or weapon harms one. One's mind gets quickly concentrated. The expression on one's face is serene. One dies unperturbed. And even if one fails to attain higher states, one will at least reach the state of the Brahma world. So, metta practice, loving kindness practice, either the formal practice that most of us are familiar with, where we daily begin our meditation by bringing to mind the phrases, and addressing them to ourselves first, a loved one, a benefactor, a difficult person, or a difficult aspect of ourselves, and we wish ourselves well, to be free from fear and anxiety, to have mental stability, to have physical health, and to be at ease. How many people ever think about their desire to be at ease? I mean, we all talk about that all the time, so it's like no big deal for us, right? Whether or not we achieve it, but we know about it. Mm-hmm. We aspire to it. Mm-hmm. And we love it when it happens. Mm-hmm. But outside of people of the way, and the Buddha way or the Christian way or the Muslim way, I mean, there are a number of traditions that really offer, if you live a deeply spiritual life, you will taste ease. And part of that always is concern for our fellow beings and behaving in consistently with those concerns. So it's important that each of us take responsibility for establishing ourselves in this practice of loving kindness and generosity. As aspiring bodhisattvas, we know that no one awakens alone. Conditioning our hearts, our thoughts, our actions toward kindness, we add these to the collective. Conditioning our hearts, our thoughts, our actions toward kindness, we can better bring that energy into the contentious and often brutal public arena. We can think and consider the best responses to infinitely complex problems. How do we meet the violence in the world? A world with increasing water shortages and floods, fires and famine, and continual and worldwide war. War without beginning and without end. That's an open question. That is an Enso question. So here we are, as yet, remarkably untouched. We are remarkably untouched. And now is the time to commit to maintaining our wholeness, our kindness and generosity, even in the most trying conditions. We work energetically now to establish ourselves in this way, so that should conditions change and become much more challenging, we have a habit that can sustain and help us. Practicing this in the continual now. Please forgive this next phrase. I just flew into it as I was writing this up. Practicing this in the continual now, as the earth ship spins through an uncertain future. Kind of corny. However, this is the challenge that we face in our practice. And the practice of metta and generosity is a sturdy support. So please bring this into your everyday, every way life. Thank you.
Page 5.